say ah. It's time for Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Specializing in periodontics, implants, and regenerative techniques, Dr. Edelstein's practice is Atlanta's premier periodontal office, where dentistry is both an art and a science. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com. And now, Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein.
And this is Jeff Davis with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. On a Tuesday afternoon, I'm going to record two shows today. These shows are pre-recorded, by the way. I like to make full disclosure to the public. You know, before we were recording, we were talking about the fact that you two have worked together for 20 years, which is a very long time. And maybe you can tell me, Sue, I'll start with you. Is the relationship between you two sort of like, it's an important relationship, like a quarterback and a center or a pitcher and a catcher, that kind of, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely.
Where you kind of, sometimes you even know in advance what the other person's going to want and what they're going to do.
I think so, absolutely.
Definitely.
For sure. Most of the time, me trying to anticipate what he wants, not necessarily him trying to anticipate what I want.
Well, I certainly wouldn't want you to be angry with me.
No. As it relates to patient care, it is most of the time me trying to figure that out in advance and support him however I can.
And, you know, for the doctor, I would imagine it's very important to have somebody working beside you there that you trust, that you feel comfortable with.
Absolutely. There are so many situations where Sue can look at a situation and she know what I would think about it. She would know, she would anticipate questions in advance that patients need answered, and it's exquisitely helpful on a multitude of levels.
And sometimes too, we've talked about it on past shows, Jeff, you've asked the question, as the dental hygienist, don't the patients sometimes tell you things or divulge things? And if they do say something or come in a certain mood, I feel it's important for him to know before he walks in the room, so I'll go back and let him know.
What kinds of things, then? What comes to mind?
If they're, on a personal level, if a spouse just passed away and they divulge that to us, or their spouse at home is very, very, very ill, and maybe that's the reason why their health care is slipping, I'll want him to know that before he walks in the room.
Or if a patient is fearful or quiet or about something?
Yes.
Like today?
Yes, we had that happen today. Yes.
What, a patient is very fearful?
She was anxious about some of her needs, and she was kind of quiet, and she just needed some hand-holding, for sure.
Does that run along gender lines at all?
Probably not.
I've got a friend, one of my best friends, a guy who's scared to death.
Yeah, we see it both.
Yeah.
It is. It's common in both, equally.
Big, burly guy.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, gosh, yes, for sure. Absolutely.
Sometimes they're the most fearful.
Yeah.
They just won't tell you.
They're the first ones to faint, you know, or whatever.
I had that almost happen yesterday. A young man took his sutures out, and the thought of that just kind of wigged him out, and he got all faint, and I think he was a little embarrassed about it, but
really?
We got him through it. Yeah,
see, I'm just the opposite for me, and I happen to be a patient of yours. Coming out is the good part.
Yeah, exactly.
Putting them in is.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be there for a while, too. You know?
Sure.
Absolutely.
Sure. In a while, I'm happy to be your patient. I'm happy that you are my professionals.
We're happy about that, too.
We are happy
and honored. We hope you felt well cared for. Yeah, for sure.
You know, I've said this on the show before, and I'll say it again. I'll probably say it a lot. And that is that, my perception is that when you go to a dentist, whether it's a general dentist or a periodontist or an endodontist or a pedodontist, whichever, orthodontist, who you use is very important.
Yes.
Is that the right grammatic? Whom you use? Who you use? I don't know. What's the right grammatical? You're the one who went to the Ivy League school.
Tell us. Yeah, but by
grammar and spelling?
By design, I was not an English major.
Yeah.
Science, math.
What did you major in?
When I went to Cornell, I majored in biology and minored in human genetics.
Wow.
I remember I took my first genetics course. I had to, under a microscope, I had to count 2,300 fruit flies and determine under a microscope whether they had curly wings or straight wings or hair or no hair on their backs.
Talk about tedious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a human genetics course.
So you're good at like organic chemistry and stuff like that?
Actually, I was.
Because many an erstwhile doctor has left to become a poet or something because of organic chemistry.
They couldn't get through.
I was actually fascinated by it. Now, before the final, I was up for two nights straight studying for the final. But
actually, Cornell, you know, Ivy League, a very competitive school.
Actually,
especially in that area.
Actually, I have a very interesting path. I was never a good student in high school. I wasn't a bad student, but I wasn't a good student. I was a B.
How'd you get into Cornell?
Well, I'm about to tell the listeners an interesting tip for their kids, maybe. But I got in through the back door. Not anything negative about it. I read an article in a previous show. I disclosed how I was compelled to go to Cornell, but
an uncle or something.
My father
Didn't he have a friend too?
His partner went to Cornell, and he always put Cornell in the top of the pinnacle of any other institution. So, but I was sidetracked with football, wrestling, and girls in high school. So I was a B minus student, and I did get into Ithaca College in Ithaca.
Same town
as Cornell. And I remember telling my guidance counselor, because I read an article, I forgot whether it was USA Today or Time Magazine, I read an article that it's much easier to transfer if you get straight A's. And I told my guidance counselor in high school that I'm going to go to Cornell, but I'm going to start off in Ithaca and get straight A's. And then I understand it's easy to transfer in if you achieve that level. And I got straight A's in Ithaca and transferred into Cornell. That was successful. The guidance counselor at the time said that was a terrible idea, and he didn't recommend it. It was a terrible, terrible idea, and he wasn't going to recommend it.
He was wrong.
In my case,
he was wrong.
And I think the listeners should know that if you know young people, if they don't get into their first choice, and if they really set their mind to it and get excellent grades, it apparently is the same today. It's much easier to transfer in. Now, I did go to Cornell after my first 2 years at Ithaca, and I did graduate with honors, and that opened up a lot of doors. But I did start off a terrific student in high school.
Your diploma is from Cornell, though.
My diploma is from Cornell, and I graduated with honors. But I'm very proud of that. And I'm also proud of the fact that I didn't really work hard till I got to college. I mean, it just wasn't, you know, when I got to college, I had like
You're proud of that, huh?
A paradigm shift. I mean, all of a sudden, it counts. So I became a very serious student, and I worked harder than anyone else, and I got
A's. Isn't that the truth? You know, the first day of school at college, it's a clean slate. Everybody starts off the same.
You know? Clean slate. So I followed that direction and ended up.
You know, if you'd stayed at Ithaca, you might be on this side of the microphone, because Ithaca had a very good radio TV program.
They had an excellent communications program. I do remember that.
Outstanding. But, you know, I find a lot of times people get into various careers by accident in many cases.
Sure.
You know, it's not necessarily what they, you know, you may not have intended to be a dentist and a periodontist. You may have intended to be something else.
You know? Actually, I knew I really loved biology and the sciences related to biology. So I knew I was headed in that direction. I never wanted to be a physician. I mentioned on a previous show that my father got sick when I was 10, and he died when I was 15, and I just didn't want to be in the situation that his surgeon was in when he came out of the operating room and told us that he wasn't going to live much longer. I never wanted to be in that position to tell a young man or young woman that. I didn't want a life and death situation.
You were 10 when he told you this?
Maybe 13 or 14 when
he got sick when you were 10, and then
he had a second brain operation. So I knew I wanted to go in that direction. I didn't want to be an MD. I give MDs a lot of credit for being in those situations, but I didn't want to. But I knew that at a young age, I worked for a veterinarian for about 2 summers.
They see a lot of tears.
Yes.
Yes, they
and
do.
And then I decided that there wasn't a fit. And I decided that dentistry was a perfect combination of science and art. And I was interested in photography and the art in an artistic sense. So it's been a great fit ever since.
So tell me, wouldn't you agree that who you use or whom you use is very important? That decision, that's a very important decision.
It's very critical. I think, you know, in dentistry in particular, I mentioned it's both an art and a science, and I find that the best dentists are the more artistic ones.
That's true.
You could learn the science a lot easier than you could have an artistic sense about it.
The artistic and creative sense. You do a lot of cosmetic dentistry as well.
We do.
In fact, we're going to talk about that next week. Among other things, we're going to talk about it this week, actually, with the gum tissue grafts, because that's a cosmetic procedure, I take it.
Yes, there are health aspects as well as cosmetic aspects. But the bottom line is people do need a certain, even if it's a small amount of gum tissue around each tooth for health. The other thing is that people do not want to be long in the tooth. So we do a great many. By the way, Jeff, do you know where that phrase came from?
No.
Horses.
Really?
Turns out as horses,
you mean they have gum recession
they
too?
They have a natural amount of gum recession
as they age, that's
apparently predictable as they age. So the expression "you don't want to be long in the tooth" is from horse people.
Really?
Yes. So patients do not want to be long in the tooth. They would rather have youthful looking teeth and a smile. So a lot of the grafting we do is for cosmetics.
Well, because we're not on TV, I can't really show the audience these photographs, but you showed me these. You sent me these photographs. Mm-hmm. They're beautiful. Who took these photographs?
He did.
Yes.
You know, our listeners don't know you're actually a, you could be a professional photographer if you weren't. Would that be a good second career, you know?
Well, kidding around, I
exit
will,
strategy, whatever you want to call
well,
it.
Well, it's definitely going to be an exit strategy. There's no question about that, but I commonly will make comment frequently that dentistry and periodontics in particular is my day job and photography is my night job, even today.
Yeah. All right. And I've seen many of your photographs. They're outstanding, outstanding, folks. If you go to Dr. Edelstein's office, you'll see them too.
Yeah, they're beautiful. They're,
the entire office is decorated with your photography. It's beautiful.
Yes.
All right. So we have to take a break. But when we come back, I want to ask you this about gum tissue grafts. And it looks like they're done for both cosmetic and medical reasons.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to ask you about that when we come back. Folks, you're listening to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. I want you to visit mygumdoc.com. Mygumdoc.com. And office across the street from Piedmont Hospital next to the Darlington Apartments. We're always going to laugh about that, Sue.
I know
the
it.
The Darlington. You shouldn't have told me.
I know.
2045 Peachtree Street. Plenty of free parking available right there at the office. Back with more of Open Wide in just a moment.
And now back to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com.
And this is Jeff Davis with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein, and well, maybe this would be a good time to tell our audience that you have a lecture coming up on October 8th. It is at Brio. It's at 6 p.m. Brio happens to be one of my favorite restaurants. I remember when they built Brio.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
They're on Peachtree, right at the Peach Shopping Center.
The big Peach Shopping Center, where Publix is.
And it's a beautiful restaurant, a great
it
restaurant.
It is. They do a great job. They do a great job. Yeah, we're hoping, you know, we're offering these seminars free to the public. Mm-hmm. A lot of people
There's no pressure to...
No, it's really information. People are embarrassed sometimes with dentures. They don't fit well. They can't chew well. They may be missing some single teeth in the back, which impairs their chewing. And it's just information to come and learn and see what's out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I know about you, Sue, that I can tell from the times that we've been together is that... You're not only very professional, but you won't work for somebody who's not at the top of their profession.
No, I can't. I have to go home at night and feel good about what people get from us in the healthcare profession, because I've seen it all. I mean, I started out my career working for folks that meant well but weren't doing good dentistry, and I would see the patients upset because it fell apart and they just paid for it, and why am I going through it again? Or sometimes the doctor's just not caring, or...
How about the greed factor?
The greed factor, certainly. I've seen that, too. And then I went to work for two general dentists who were excellent at what they did. We talked earlier, just a few minutes ago, about what an artistic sense brings to the game. One of them was extremely artistic. He hand-built his own guitars. His daughter is an artist. And then I learned what it was like to really provide top-notch dentistry. Mm, and ever since then, I knew I could never work for less than that. So, and it's a little bit of a risk when you're looking for a new job. You hope that person is that good. You never really know until you're in their practice.
So you're there.
You see it. Yeah. And, but of course I see it day in and day out in our practice. And it's much more rewarding to go to work. You don't just have a job. You have a mission. It's exciting. You're changing people's lives. Wow. It's a much better feeling than just a paycheck and filling and drilling and that's it.
So let me ask you, Dr. Edelstein,
sure.
Can a dentist be... Is it increasingly difficult to be a general practitioner today because there seems to be so much technology today and there's so much more to the profession that it just seems to me that it's harder and harder to just be a generalist? I mean, how can you get good at anything if you're doing everything, if you know what I mean?
Well, that's true. I do give our general practitioners that we work with a tremendous amount of credit. And the best ones actually know what they know and they know what they don't know.
They know when to release somebody to somebody else.
Correct. And they do that on a regular basis if they think that a case is beyond their scope in any area. I know many general dentists that do a lot of root canals, but they will do the root canals toward the front of the mouth, which are a lot easier, and refer out the ones that are in the back of the mouth, which are much more difficult and have a higher failure rate. So, and other areas, other specialties in a similar fashion. So I give the generalists a lot of credit, but to know what you know and what you don't know, I think is, and I do the same thing in my practice.
You sometimes, do you have to, we used to say this in the auto body business, my dad had an auto body shop, come in behind somebody else's work, if you know what I mean?
We do on occasion, and we do what the best that we can to fix a body that hadn't been repaired as well.
No, look, I know how it is.
It's someone who went to another body shop, perhaps.
Yeah, but I mean, sometimes it can be, I guess, uncomfortable. You know, you're dealing with other members of your profession. You're going to say things about perhaps the kind of care that they've received, but at the final analysis, you have to be honest with the patient about what their situation is and what needs to be done.
Most of the folks we work with have a very clear understanding of their role and what they shouldn't do, what they can't do, what they feel comfortable with, and they've had enough continuing education to be very proficient at it. So most of the time that isn't really the case on a regular basis.
You're referring dentists, the dentists who refer patients to you.
Yes.
There's a lot of them out here in this
yes.
town. They're generally pretty good dentists, aren't they?
Yes, they generally are.
Mm-hmm. You do good work.
Well, water reaches its own level. So I guess some of the folks out there that don't do such hot work, they might be working with specialists that don't do such hot work either. I guess that's part of it.
Look, I've known people who've referred somebody to a specialist, and they don't even particularly care for that specialist. I don't like them or her, but they refer people to that person because they feel that that's the best person in that particular
right.
area of dentistry, and they're not going to let their own personal feelings get in the way.
Right.
Well, that's the really professional way of doing it. No question about it.
Yeah. You know, I think also, and we're going to talk about gum tissue grafts, I promise, but I think, tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, many people don't understand the importance, not just from a cosmetic standpoint, but from a medical standpoint, how important it is to have good oral health, how much it's related to our overall health, maybe our longevity.
More than ever before. I mean, the research is compelling. It's been out for a decade. At least we've known about it for a decade. It's getting itself into the lay press more and more so in the last few years. And I really do. I have a hunch that on down the road, we're going to understand that that's just basic medicine for all of us. Have a healthy mouth. It contributes to so many other things. We can no longer walk around with gum disease.
Mm. So... I have some photos here, which you were kind enough to send to me, Sue. And we're looking at, it says cosmetic gingival augmentation, all three of these, all six of these photos. Mm-hmm. And they all have before and after, although
yes.
they're labeled as, well, either before and after, or in this one case, pre-op, 10-month post-op.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Do you happen to remember these particular cases? Did they come to you for cosmetic reasons, or did they come to you because maybe they just wanted you to examine them and you decided and you found that
some of both.
There's some recession here
yes,
that needs
some
to be dealt
of both.
With?
The one photograph that shows the lower teeth, Jeff, believe it or not, that person, you can see the gum tissue was infected. It was thin. That tooth desperately needed gum tissue in front of it. She was probably losing the bone on the front of that root. And believe it or not, she did not like the way that root showed. She cosmetically did not like seeing it, even though she was the only one that saw it, and her dentist and hygienist that were in her mouth. That was a goal for her.
You know, I've known people, women especially, I think,
yeah,
who've had cosmetic procedures done, or they do things to fix themselves up,
sure.
And it's very expensive, and they do it for themselves.
Sure.
Don't necessarily do it for anybody else. They do it for themselves.
Yes, correct. Yeah, that's and this was a young gal, actually. And that's one thing.
No, I would never be that way because I can accept me very easily for who I am. I don't care what I think.
But that's you. And there are people out there that have different feelings about it. You know, that particular young lady, it didn't show in her smile. No one sees it. But for her, it was important. That's one thing that we do that's a little unique with our gum grafts. And we've evolved. 20 years ago, we didn't necessarily do this. But we have evolved to this, especially in the past decade, is to finding out from the patient, what's your goal? We can sit here and define their goal all day long, but we're not going to have a happy patient unless we know what their goal is.
That doesn't count.
Yeah, it doesn't count. What we think is not...
That's not anywhere near as important as what a patient thinks.
Correct.
When I see a grafting case, the first thing I'll do is to take digital photographs of that case. And then the second thing I'll do is I'll ask them a few basic questions about this recession. Is it a cosmetic problem? And is it sensitive?
Sensitive and to like heat and cold and
touch?
Yeah, sugar, touch, metal.
Yes.
Cold
if
air.
The answer is yes or no to those two questions. That may completely change my direction in what type of graft I recommend and what modification of that type of graft. Because I'm also keeping in mind from their standpoint, I want a graft that would be create health as well as create longevity. I don't want to redo these grafts. So I gravitate towards techniques that last for a lifetime if possible.
Why did I know that this patient was a she? Okay, I'm looking.
Does it look like a she?
I'm just telling you, it does to me for some reason. All I'm seeing is a set of teeth.
That's
I can't
funny.
See the face at all.
It was.
I see about eight teeth here.
It was a younger female in her 30s, I believe. She could have even been in her late
20s.
What about
this patient, he or she? You have that in front of you.
Well, I have this one here in front of me, and I was yes. looking at it and wondering.
He or she?
Wow. I don't know. I can't tell.
You could be on Jimmy Kimmel.
I really can't tell.
It was a she.
It was a she? How about this third one here? Can you tell?
Do you remember? Do you know, Dr. Olstein? I know.
I don't remember.
That's a he.
I don't remember.
You know, there's some yellowing in the teeth, and that might...
Could be.
That might be a little more of a
could
guy
be
thing.
A giveaway. Who knows?
Than the woman thing?
Yeah.
By the way, when I see your literature, you mentioned smoking a couple of three times when I look at all your literature.
Yeah.
So it's obviously a very important subject to you.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Smoking is detrimental to not just someone's periodontal health, but in general health, of course. But it also that also may change the kind of technique I would recommend because they heal differently.
So postoperatively,
yes.
You have a different situation with the smoker.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
For
now,
sure.
Now, I'll tell you, Jeff, in the last 30 years, that's changed a lot. 30 years ago, my average patient smoked. Today, my average patient doesn't smoke. And that has opened up a whole different avenue of different procedures that we could do today with a great deal of comfort that we didn't have 30 years ago.
Did I mention on the show that when I see a young person smoking, you know, at a Starbucks or someplace, I see them puffing on a cigarette, somebody 20 years old, I mean, I want it's all I can do not to say something to them.
Go up and shake them.
I want to tell them, you know, you don't think you're ever going to be 50, but you are, God mm-hmm. willing, someday. And you're going to hate yourself for having smoked.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yep.
I don't know if I mentioned this. I smoked as a teenager. I was about 15 years old, and I didn't mention the story. Okay, so I was on the side of a 7-Eleven. I don't have a 7-Eleven down here, but up in Philly, they have 7-Eleven.
Magic Market.
Magic yeah, Market. Magic Market, that's right.
Or racetrack.
Yeah. So we have 7-Eleven, and I'm on the side of the 7-Eleven puffing on a cigarette. I don't think my parents knew that I smoked. I didn't want anybody to see me, except my buddies. And there was nobody there. I'm puffing on a cigarette on the side of a 7-Eleven. All of a sudden, this woman comes walking around real fast. Before I could do anything, put it out or anything, she kind of caught me, and she started yelling at me. I never forget it. She said, "What are you doing? This is a terrible thing you're doing." She just, you know, she was scolding me. And then she left. And I hated her for having done it, but I know now that she did the right thing.
Oh, yeah.
She's one of the reasons I quit.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, if her words had an impact, if it stirred you to action.
Absolutely did. I mean, it wasn't just one person. You know, I had an aunt who died of lung cancer.
Yeah,
you know,
that'll make you think twice.
But you also see, being in the profession you're in, too, you see other types of cancer, like oral cancer, from smoking in many cases, right?
Yes.
That's the frightening part about smoking. When a oral cancer is not, it is a rarer form of cancer, but when found, it is extremely harmful. It is extremely devastating. We had a patient pass away from oral cancer. I'm sure you remember who that is.
Cosmetically, it's devastating too,
yes,
I understand.
Yes, the treatment for is a lot of removal of a lot of tissues, a lot of teeth, a lot of your tongue, a lot of jawbone.
Yeah, you're not going to look the same.
It's devastating, yeah. It really is. The consequences are just horrific.
How about the chewing, the tobacco?
Yep, all of that, yeah.
I know, I think it's in baseball now. They don't let them, maybe it's the minor leaguers aren't allowed to, chew tobacco.
I hope they have that rule.
Oh, yeah.
So in these cases here of these folks here whose pictures you can't see out there, folks, but I can see them. The teeth look extremely long, you know, in the pre
long
in
the tooth, so to speak.
Long in the tooth, and that's not good, right?
Correct.
Why is it not good?
Well, each tooth needs a certain amount of gum tissue. So generally, when the teeth are long, that gum tissue that is the healthy, resilient gum tissue that's resistant to mechanical trauma usually is gone, or it's much diminished in volume. So the recession can end up being progressive. And we have seen many cases where someone's had an infection around or in front of a tooth because there's that lack of protective gum tissue.
Do they usually know they have an infection?
Usually not. Occasionally, dental infections drain in the mouth. So generally, they're painless because they're draining. When there's a dental infection that doesn't drain, then it becomes uncomfortable, and it could be considerably so. That's why root canal pain is generally uncomfortable, because there's pressure from the infection. But other types of infections in the mouth are generally painless if they're draining.
Does the mouth in general, does it heal quickly?
It does. Actually, the turnover rate for oral tissues is maybe 2 to 3 times other areas of the body.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, it is.
You know, I just wonder, you know, when we, you know, kind of we cut our finger or so, and the first thing we do is we put our mouth to it. And I'm wondering if that's maybe an evolutionary thing or something. There's something about putting your tongue to it, you know, your mouth, the saliva, whatever it is, that maybe it speeds the healing process.
I don't know about that. I think we just want it to stop.
You don't have to be that way about it.
I don't think that's sound medical advice, Jeff. We'll scratch
put
that.
Put your tongue to your cut.
I have a boxer that does the same thing.
Yeah. I don't lick myself in those places.
I never said that.
All right. So gum tissue grafts. Okay, the first thing I'm seeing here, it says a gum graft may be necessary to protect your teeth from the damaging effects of gum recession, or you may choose to have one to improve the appearance of your smile. Which do you find more often?
About 50-50.
Yeah,
I would say so. It's common for someone to have a cosmetic problem with it, and it's also common for someone to have a health-related issue because of it.
It says many people don't even notice that their gums have receded because it's a gradual process.
Yes.
So this happens over a number of years.
Yes.
It can.
Is this another one of those things where if we discover it early, it's going to be less involved?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I talk about a biologic cost in waiting. The types of procedures that we can do if it's early are minimally invasive. They involve much less a surgical event, and the post-op course is much easier. And the success rate is through the roof the earlier we see something. If that needs to be correcting, that is. Sometimes we watch areas of recession too. If I think it's stable, one of the beautiful things of taking the digital photographs that I do, if I think something is stable, I will take photographs and verify that it's stable after a period of years. And then it's not uncommon for me to recommend no treatment.
But if you take photographs, you can see...
Yes, I can see progression or no progression. That's one of my... That's my third question. Besides, is it sensitive? And is it a cosmetic problem? My third question is, have you seen it worsen? Because that is the third thing that I would indicate to me that a graft is indicated in many situations to keep it from progressing further.
Now, I remember many years ago, we have to take a break, but my mother... She had a problem with her gums. This is so many years ago. It's probably 50 years ago. And they actually took out part of her gum. Mm-hmm. They sliced off, I don't know, the top part of her gum. You ever heard of this kind of thing?
Yeah.
Do we do it today? I mean, it just seemed kind of barbaric.
It's a completely different world with completely different technology and completely different procedures.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that because...
Yes.
And it was very painful for her, too. I remember it was just awful.
I've been in practice 30 years, and I've never done the procedure that you are describing.
They put some kind of foil on her.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Today, our procedures will be minimally invasive or non-invasive and zero to no discomfort.
Well, it was terrible. I can tell you this. She was in a bad mood for quite a while.
I don't blame her.
All right, we're going to take a break, folks. You're listening to Open Wide with Sue Skipper, Dr. Bruce Edelstein, from the office of Dr. Bruce Edelstein, located 2045 Peachtree Road, right across the street from Piedmont Hospital, next to the Darlington Apartments. Plenty of free parking available. By the way, I saw you have your own spot there.
Yes.
Just for your patients, which is very nice. I don't have any parking problem at all there, by the way.
No.
There's plenty of space.
There should be. There's plenty. Especially because we have a few reserved spots in the front.
No, but it's not like a parking deck where I had to sometimes you drive all the way up to the fifth level just to find
six,
one.
Oh, six, seven, yeah.
That's terrible, but this one is nothing.
Mm-mm, it's easy.
Visit mygumdoc.com, mygumdoc.com. Back with more in just a moment.
And now, back to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com.
And this is Jeff Davis with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Visit mygumdoc.com, folks. Also want to remind you of our new patient special. I happen to have taken advantage of it myself. It's $129. It's worth $650. That's a heck of a deal. And I could see why it would be worth $650 because it was quite involved.
Yes.
We gather a lot of
information. And it was painless. You know, it's interesting, after talking to you two, though, and doing several shows with you, I finally said to myself, I'm going to stop describing myself in the third person, this friend of mine.
As a friend. Yeah. I have a friend.
I know a guy who, and finally fess up to you, and I said, you know something? I want you to take a look at me. I want you to examine me. You get this all the time, though, don't you?
Yes.
People come to you.
All the time, but I think I was on to you when I saw a shift in your facial expression that maybe this friend was a little closer to home.
So it's $129. It's worth $650. Also, interest-free financing for a year should be in that situation, or 10% off any procedure over $2,000. Right. That's a lot of money to save.
Sure.
Yes.
By the way, what's it like at a party when you tell people you're a periodontist? Do they start to tell you about their own personal situation or a friend?
Yes.
Is it a good icebreaker kind of thing?
Yeah, but the interesting thing is, one of the reasons why we're doing the show is most folks don't know what a periodontist is. And when I tell people, or my wife tells people, that I'm a periodontist, they'll say, oh, does that have something to do with feet?
Oh, yeah, like a podiatrist or something?
Yeah, or does he treat kids? And so there's a tremendous amount of confusion as to the periodontist being the director of the foundation of the teeth.
You know, I know a lady, this is many years ago, excuse me, I think I interrupted you, her son was 18 and he went to Dunwoody High School. He was a football player there, a very good player. And she said he won a scholarship to Dartmouth. And I said, wow, that's outstanding. What an education he's going to get at Dartmouth, the Ivy League school,
mm-hmm.
like Cornell, where you went. She said, I got to be honest with you, I've never heard of Dartmouth. I said, well, I want to tell you two things. First of all, you're a moron. You never heard of Dartmouth. You know, you're 50 years old. You never heard of Dartmouth. And secondly, I know your son. He's a great kid and he's a great athlete. But I mean, unless he's a really great student, I don't know if he's going to cut it up there, because that place, it's like Cornell. I mean, you get the best of the best. Yeah. You ever intimidated by how smart some of these kids are? I mean, it's been a long time, but
yeah, you know, Jeff, when I was ever intimidated, I think I compensated by working harder. Because there were a lot of people. I had a roommate who was brilliant. I mean, this guy was brilliant. He would take a 400 level course, and he would never go to a class. He would stay up all night and literally skim through maybe 10 books and sit down in the morning and write a 20-page paper with 3 pages of footnotes.
Wow.
And get an A in it.
Wow.
This guy was brilliant.
400 level, huh?
Yeah. So I compensated any of that by not being the smartest guy in the class by working harder. Bottom line.
400 level. I'm a 101 guy myself.
So there were very, very bright guys there.
All right, so I have some literature here in front of me about gum tissue grafts. Mm-hmm. And it says that there are basically three different procedures. And maybe we can go over them real quickly. Connective tissue grafts, free gingival grafts, and pedicle grafts. Did I pronounce them all correctly?
Yes, okay. You did.
So connective tissue grafts, this looks like perhaps maybe it's the most common type of graft?
Actually, I think all these types of grafts, as well as variations of those, as well as other grafting techniques, I use very frequently and interchangeably. And sometimes I will use two or three different techniques in the same patient. Every patient is different, the objectives are different, and
every tooth is different,
and the situation is different. And I think what we do exquisitely well, because I do it every day, is we try to custom tailor these so that people have the best outcome and the best experience. So we use all different grafts in all different situations, and no patient is the same and no tooth is the same.
Well, this connective tissue graft that I'm looking at, it says that the there's a flap of skin that's cut at the roof of the mouth, the palate.
Mm-hmm.
And then underneath that, there's a piece of connective tissue that's removed and then stitched to the gum tissue surrounding the exposed root.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds rather involved.
It is.
I mean, you have to know what you're doing, I would imagine.
It is very technique sensitive. There's no question about it. All of these grafts are technique sensitive, and I use my magnifying loops to be able to provide these procedures in the best way possible. And each one of these graft techniques are unique in their own way and technique sensitive in their own way, and different indications and different results. And my job is to custom tailor these to the right situation and the right patient and help them have just terrific experiences and outcomes. No question about it.
Is this particular technique, the connective tissue graft, mm-hmm. is it painful?
No, actually it's not. Because the way we design it, by the harvested tissue is the undersurface tissue. So patients rarely, if ever, complain about the harvested site. And they rarely, if ever, complain about the site that we where we place the tissue. So it's I've gravitated to that procedure and on many situations because of good outcomes and good experiences.
Uh-huh. Which includes minimal pain. That's a good experience too.
Yes.
So do people exaggerate? Do they equate a good dentist with minimal pain?
Yeah.
They say, boy, he when he treats me or she treats me, I mean, it's just virtually painless. What a great dentist.
Yeah. But that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know a few dentists personally that patients will say that, and they're terrible dentists. They're just painless.
But the patient confuses the two.
Yes, absolutely. But on the other side of the coin, there are a lot of dentists or periodontists that are very heavy-handed, and I think that's unnecessary in a lot of situations too.
Sometimes, too, patients, I think they've done studies to show that if they have a high fear factor, if they're very afraid, they will usually report more postoperative discomfort.
I would imagine that's the case.
Yeah, sometimes it's patient-driven.
By the way, as the hygienist, Sue,
yes,
will they tell you sometimes that they're in pain, and maybe they won't tell Dr. Edelstein because, well, you're the doctor, but maybe you're my confidant, Sue.
Not that.
Maybe the other way around.
Other
things, yes, but not pain.
They're happy. They want everyone to know how they're hurting and why they're hurting and for how long they're hurting.
They want anyone.
And I'll see them first, and they'll tell me how long they've been hurting. And when he comes in, I think I got that all taken care of. And he'll come in, and we hear the story all over.
Now, in your years as a hygienist, and how many years you've been a hygienist?
32, 33,
really?
Something.
You
like
certainly
that.
Don't look old enough to have.
Oh, thank you.
32 years experience as
a
hygienist.
Tell it to my back. I'm bending over my patients.
Could you write a book about the stories people have told you?
I actually have been published in a book
about the wild things that they say.
No,
crazy.
This was not a wild story. You know the book Chicken Soup for the Soul?
Yeah.
They did Chicken Soup for the Dental Soul, and I told a story about a Vietnam veteran that I saw.
Oh, really?
And it was a very touching, poignant story about his experience in Vietnam. I'm not even sure I cleaned his teeth that day, to be perfectly honest.
Wow.
We just got to talking. At that time, for whatever reason, I was interested in the plight of the veteran. I knew the Vietnam veteran in particular. I knew they were different. I knew they had experiences that previous war veterans did not. I don't remember if I studied it in a psychology class. I'm not really sure, but he came in and had a belt buckle on that said Vietnam veteran and proud of it. And I commented on it, and he wasn't sure if he was talking to friend or foe, and we went from there. And I never saw him again. I saw him one time, never saw him again, but I wrote a story about it, and I got published got paid a little bit of money for it, too.
You could still probably write a book about some of the other things.
I probably could. I don't know if people would want to read a long book about it, but there certainly was a book published, and they did sell. And there are some really funny stories in that book and poignant.
I think it could be a reality show, actually.
Really?
Now, I do think, yes, I do think The Dental Office could be a reality TV show.
All right, we have to take a break. In our final segment, we're going to talk more about gum tissue grafts, including taking graft material from a tissue bank, which sounds very, very high tech to me, and then also recovery from gum tissue grafts. Folks, you're listening to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein from the office of Dr. Bruce Edelstein, periodontist, located at 2045 Peachtree Street. Plenty of free parking. Don't worry about the parking situation. And you validate. It's very nice.
We do pay for it, yes.
That makes you feel a lot better.
It's a nice thing to do.
It is wonderful.
People appreciate that.
It is wonderful. Yep. Visit mygumdoc.com, mygumdoc.com. And if you're thinking about maybe an implant and you want to learn more, there's going to be a lecture on October 8th. Is it going to cover implants, the lecture?
It is going to be devoted to implants and giving people information. And basically, this is a public service that we're doing. It's free of charge. And we want people to have the opportunity to improve their health, confidence, and their quality of life, which dental implants can do.
And it's on October 8th, 6 p.m., free of charge at one of the best restaurants in this town, Brio. We've given Brio some pretty good plugs.
They will eat well, yes.
Back with more of Open Wide in just a moment.
And now, back to Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com.
And this is Jeff Davis with Sue Skipper, Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Just a reminder, folks, a new patient special, $129. I happen to have it done myself. Well worth the money. Well worth it. In fact, it's worth $650. You get it for $129. And one thing I've learned from this show is the importance of regular visits to the dentist. You know, these, it's kind of like the crack in the windshield, you know? It doesn't get better.
Nope.
It gets
only
worse.
It only goes in one direction.
You know, the transmission, it's slipping just slightly.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't going to get better.
Nope.
It's going to get worse. And the worse that it gets, the more involved it is, the more painful, the more expensive, whatever. So what about grafts that come from material from a tissue bank, Dr. Edelstein?
Well, we do have that option available for in situations and folks that that just want a more minimally invasive procedure. We can either take, there's a freeze-dried skin product that's from a certified bank and it's sterilized that we can use. And another product that we use on a regular basis is just a collagen bilayer product. And a third product that is available is from amniotic tissues, from placentas that have been donated.
That is amazing.
And there it turns out there's growth factors in the amniotic sac. Of course, it's from a bone bank that's a tissue bank, rather, that's been certified and it's been sterilized multiple times. So
let me clarify, in lieu of the recent controversy with Planned Parenthood, yes, that particular tissue that Dr. Edelstein's referring to comes from women who are having C-sections and donate their amniotic
placental
tissue.
Yeah.
They donate the placental
tissue. It's not
tissue.
A fetus, it's
no,
the
correct
placenta.
It is not coming from other controversial areas that we've heard in the news. Mm. So I just wanted to
correct
be clear about that.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we do have other options available for patients that do would prefer a more minimally invasive process.
All right, so what you've said is that, you know, it's gum tissue grafts are not necessarily painful.
Not okay necessarily, not in our hands.
What about recovery from gum tissue grafts?
Well, part of it depends upon the type of graft necessary that we have agreed about the objectives ahead of time. Part of it depends upon how many teeth are involved. And we go out of our way to help people have excellent experiences. And no matter what technique we choose is best for the desired, agreed-upon outcome to meet our mutual objectives with our patients, we will try to use variations of the technique involved to help them have great experiences. And most grafts that we do, Sue, if you, I'd say most people are back to work in a day or two.
A day or two, yeah.
Yeah, and most people, even a more involved graft, it might be three or four, but when mm-hmm we talk to them, they're comfortable during that few to 3 or 4 day period.
There's one or two periodontists in town. We see some of their patients for second opinions, and they tell their patients expect to be laid up for 2 weeks, multiple sutures. We just shake our head. Have never seen that happen
wow
in our practice.
Excellent.
It doesn't have to be like that.
Excellent. Well, I hope I never need one, but I know where to go.
If you do.
If I do, and that is the office of Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I had a lot more questions, and maybe we can talk more about gum tissue grafts in future
mm-hmm
shows. I'd
sure
love to touch on it some more. Visit mygumdoc.com, folks. Mygumdoc.com. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Open Wide with Sue Skipper, Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Thank you both very much.
Pleasure.
This has been Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein. Specializing in periodontics, implants, and regenerative techniques, Dr. Edelstein's practice is Atlanta's premier periodontal office, where dentistry is both an art and a science. For more information, visit mygumdoc.com. Open Wide with Sue Skipper and Dr. Bruce Edelstein, Tuesdays at noon on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.